Welcome to another episode of Managing Change on Internet Blog Talk Radio, your host, Ronald Allen. This is home for truly engaging conversation. Managing Change brings you an eclectic perspective on issues that affect you, the individual, the family nucleus, careers, business, and that entrepreneurial spirit that is uniquely American. And yes, a word or two about life's perspectives on managing change for that human touch that drives us to unique heights of accomplishment. Carve out the time every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. for Managing Change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen. Now, also here at www.managingchange2.com. Internet radio at its best.
And welcome to another edition of Managing Change. I am Ronald Allen, and every Tuesday and Thursday evenings, typically, we bring you an eclectic perspective on the topic of change. Well, today's program is certainly unique. I'm talking 40 years unique. I'm speaking with the headmaster of Prior Park College, the current headmaster of Prior Park College, and we're going to kind of not too much reminisce, but certainly look at the new opportunities that the school has developed. I'm talking with Mr. James Murphy O'Connor. He is the headmaster. And just to give you a quick background from my perspective, because I know things have changed. I attended Prior Park Preparatory School in Cricklade, Swindon, and then graduated to the college, which was made up of two houses, St. Peter's and St. Paul's. And we can speak with James in a moment because St. Peter's, if I'm not mistaken, no longer exists, partly because of the educational system in England has changed, and O-levels, oh my goodness, I'm dating myself, is no longer a standard of attainment. So I'm going to jump right in because we only have a few moments. James is calling from Bath, England. Good afternoon, James.
Good afternoon, Ronald. Delighted to be on your program.
Thank you very much. Can we quickly just talk about a little of the beginnings of Prior Park College so people begin to understand how old this institution is and that it has survived and is still able to equip children both in education and, as we refer to, as pastoral care?
Certainly. Well, we're very fortunate to be in the beautiful World Heritage City of Bath, and in fact our school buildings date back to the 1730s when Ralph Allen, who was the entrepreneur who saw the possibility of developing the Georgian city of Bath that's now so famous around the world, the buildings we live in fact his home. So he built himself a beautiful mansion, Palladian mansion, overlooking the city, and had the landscape developed around him, beautiful lakes. And he looks down, or he looked down from his home, now our school, across the city. So in a lovely, ancient, historic part of the city. And we're very grateful to him for his vision and his sense of purpose. And the school itself was set up exactly 100 years later in 1830, and it was the first of the Roman Catholic schools to be set up in England since the Reformation. So from the 1530s onwards, Catholics had not allowed to be educated in England, and indeed not allowed to take up any form of office whatsoever. But the law had changed in 1829, and Prior Park College was set up in 1830 as a school to educate young Catholic boys, as it was then. And it, too, was set up by an entrepreneurial spirit, Bishop Baines, who saw the opportunity for Catholic emancipation to broaden the educational landscape of the UK in the United Kingdom in 1830. So Prior Park College has been here since 1830.
You talk about educating and custodial care of some 600 students, now co-ed, It was only male when I attended. And it's also a day school. So let's talk a bit about the education, because that is an actual key component. People come from all over the world. The student body, when I attended, Quicklaid was looking at my school report back in 67. Wasn't the best student, but I'd love to learn. Quicklaid, the student body was made up of people from literally around the world. I'm talking Kajda, Chris Anura, Shula Musakanya, Mark Anderson. Joe Bradley was actually the only American that attended the school. That point, are you still having that international blend? And as you continue with the 600-plus students, male and female, what are some of the academic and international, let's say, cultural challenges that you're addressing?
Well, you'll be delighted to know that we still have the international element to the college. We are now a school of 600. I think it was probably a school of 200 in your day, Ronald. So we have grown. But we do see 600 as a magic number. We could grow larger than that. We don't want to, because we see at the college a very special sense of community. And we think that a school of up to 600 enables that to be developed and to be nurtured. And for me, as the headmaster, I want to know all of my students by name, want to know who they are and what their aspirations are, and who their parents are and their background. And we think 600 is a really good number. Many of our competitor schools in the UK have now stretched to 700, 800, 1,000, in many cases 1,500. And we don't want to do that, so we're going to stick to our 600. And within our 600 current students, we have about 50 students who join us from all over the world. And we are really keen that they do so. In fact, my assembly this Friday will be on internationalism and what it means for us as a college. And we welcome students from the Far East, from Africa, from Europe. And indeed, last week, my wife, Ali, and I were in Mexico meeting with Mexican families there. And these families, they come and they enrich our experience in Bath. There's always a danger wherever you are in the world to become slightly local in your perspective, slightly parochial. And I think one of the great benefits of having students from all over the world is that it lifts our eyes up from the valley of Bath and makes us aware of situations, political and cultural affairs and events all over the world. And indeed, just last month, the Chinese New Year, our Chinese students took the school assembly and gave us a wonderful insight into Chinese culture and into the whole celebration of the New Year and why it's so important to the Chinese community. And that enriched our community of mainly English day students and boarders in an extraordinary way. We will continue to look to recruit students from all over the world. And if nothing else, we're in a very competitive part of the world for schools, and our internationalism gives us something a little bit different from many of our competitors.
Most schools today, and certainly in conversation at the dinner table, social media, seems to revolve around technology and how it's literally changing how we interact, how we exchange information, and how quickly things come to market. Yep. To me, Friar Park College was an intellectual experience in broadening one's base of knowledge so that no matter what comes at you in life, you can carry, as we used to do fencing. Yep. How are you addressing that? Because when I went on the website, I do see the sports, I do see the academics, I do see the fundamentals, and certainly as you'll just talk a moment briefly about pastoral care.
Yeah.
How is Friar Park College embracing that technology and perhaps even looking to play a role in some of its creativity options of creating technology?
Yes, Ronald, thank you. We are, of course, embracing new technology. I think part of the reason the school has been here for nearly 200 years is because it's embraced change. And I think we do it in a whole range of ways, really. Fundamentally, we're here to educate the child in a very broad sense to enable them to make good decisions. And I think that's very important in the new world of IT, that they're educated, they're aware of what is coming their way in terms of IT and information technology, but they're able to be the master of that and not to be drawn into all the details that can come, the overwhelming details of the internet. So we do still educate our children in ways of creative thinking, of ways of responding, critical thinking, to make sure that they are able to make the very best use of the new technologies. And we still, therefore, find a good use for the Latin and for the Greek, where they're learning great disciplines when it comes to evaluating, analyzing languages and materials. We think those traditional subjects are still very, very important. We're also very aware of the new sort of bold world as well. So the college, albeit on a site that's 300 years old, has completely has Wi-Fi throughout and internet access for all of our students. All of our students are encouraged to bring the electronic wherewithal that they need for lessons, from tablets to iPads and iPhones, should they need it. And they're encouraged by teachers to use these in all sorts of creative ways as well. And we also have, running through our curriculum, IT. We offer a course very much to do with responses to the new technologies. And we are currently considering introducing computer science as an A-level subject as well, so that it runs right through our curriculum for our students. But we do see in certain subjects, as I've said, like the Latin and the Greek, certainly the maths, the sort of key kind of coding skills that many of our students might go into the world of computers, that they need in order to actively thrive in that world, not to be overawed by that world, and to make sure that they are open to the wonderful advances that have been made, but also to be aware of the many dangers and pitfalls that can come in such an unregulated world as it is at the moment. As a school, we develop a whole range of new technologies. Our design technology department is one of the finest that I've had the privilege of overseeing. And within that, they have a very strong entrepreneurship drive. And this year, we are introducing an entrepreneurship academy here at Prior Park, which is very modern for English independent education. And within that, there will be a whole raft of new technologies, including information technology, IT, the internet, Wi-Fi, for our students to engage with and to look, not only to be able to cope with the great changes, but also to perhaps be at the forefront of making those changes as they go through the school. So we see it as a whole package, from the traditional to the ultra-modern.
Well, James, you kind of stole my thunder on that academy, but that's great, because it leads into my other question. You study and teach history.
Yes.
Which English history is very different than American history, yet they are heavily intertwined.
Yeah.
Obviously. how do you share, or how do you engage and sell the need for students who are coming up primarily in this so-called, and I'm glad you mentioned the subtlety of having that balance between IT and other basic skill sets,
so yeah,
that we still can communicate with one another. We're still human. We still know what touching is, what empathy is.
Yes.
It's very removed from IT. How do you use your knowledge of history and sell that to the students so that they can be balanced with their education?
In a number of ways, really. You know, first and foremost, I was very privileged with my own education, and I was given a great love for history in particular, and I like to impart that sense of the wonder and the admiration for the discipline of history in its own right. And I think that's very important. I think sometimes in the modern world, always looking for the next thing or for the next sort of connective, and actually there is a great virtue in just loving a subject for its own sake. And I have three books in front of me on my desk here, and they're all histories. They've all been given to me by parents and people I know, and they're all histories of people or parts of the world that I know very little about. And I think, you know, I will look forward to reading those and discovering more. So there's the innate love of a subject on one level. And then, of course, there are the great skills that a subject like history, be it American history or British history. For me, it's mainly Irish history. With my name, you might have guessed there's a great love of the homeland. And within that, great skills that are hugely relevant to the modern student. Primarily, I would say, the skills of discernment, to discern what is looks accurate and what doesn't. The great skills of analysis, so you can analyze sources and work out what is, again, important and what's not. To evaluate, to get a balance between things that might lead you towards your conclusion and might not. But also a sense of balance in your study. So sometimes in the modern world, in America at the moment, of course, there's a potential president who's fairly extreme and polemic and presents one argument. And I think that history the good historians always understand that there are more than one argument. There's a balance to all these things. And I think to be able to see two sides of an argument is a very important skill. So I think that ability with evaluative skills, with analytical skills, are really modern skills that can be applied through the world of IT, can be applied in any boardroom, in any law court, in fact, in any job. So I have great ease in convincing my students of not only the love of history, but the great benefits to them as future journalists and lawyers and politicians.
It's so interesting, James. You quoted or paraphrased John Alexander Smith. And if I can take 2 moments, because we're not going to have our typical musical interlude because of our schedule.
Right.
Gentlemen, you are now about to embark on a course of studies which will occupy you for 2 years. Together, they form a noble adventure, but I would like to remind you of an important one. Nothing that you will learn in the course of studies will be of the slightest possible use to you in life, save only this, that if you work hard and intelligently, you should be able to detect when a man is talking rot. And that, in my view, is the main, if not the sole purpose of education. So that's interesting. I did this quote
very
some
good
time ago, and for you to mention it brings that to the pro. You're also passionate about the team, the other teachers. We had both brothers and lay teachers. Is that still the combination?
It's not, actually. The Christian brothers who taught you left Prior Park in 1980. The order of brothers was receding across the world, and I think there are very few Christian brothers left now in Australia and maybe in Ireland and one or two pockets elsewhere. So when the Christian brothers left, a lay administration was appointed, a self-appointed governing body, and they appointed a lay headmaster. And I'm now 36 years on, the fourth lay headmaster. So I have a teaching body of 87 teachers, one chaplain, but the 87 teachers are all lay teachers, men and women.
I mentioned earlier that the Prior Park College had 2,000, St. Peter, St. Paul.
Yes.
I know the educational system has changed in England. There was a massive push towards the late 70s, 80s, because of languages, the need for more diverse languages. Can you give us some outline of the different educational levels? And I see here you have IGCSE, an EPQ, please?
Yeah. Well, it's a constantly changing landscape in the UK at the moment. And one of the great joys of being an independent school is that we can act independently. So we are, in a way, a little bit like educational magpies. We look for the very best in all the different systems, and we choose them according to our the ability of our students. So we take students into the college age 11. And between 11 and about 14, we give them the broadest education we possibly can. We expose them to Greek and to Chinese and to history and so on. And then at the age of 14, they start to select fewer of those subjects. But again, we like a nice broad base of subjects for them to study. So they take 11 subjects forward from the age of 14. And at 16, they are then examined. And in England, there's a sort of two-tier system. There's the GCSE system, and we do some GCSEs in some of our subjects. But in the main, we offer what are called IGCSEs, which are seen as more demanding. There are no modules. There's no coursework. They're end-of-unit exams, and they seem to test our students anyway, we feel, in a more incisive way, and we like the way in which the exam boards lay out their curriculum and so on. So we like the IGCSEs. So at 16, our students will take 11 GCSEs or more like the IGCSEs. And then they go on to A-level. Again, this has all changed in the UK at the moment. And we've looked at all the various different offerings at 18, but we like the traditional A-levels because of the great skills and the depth of the subject knowledge that they carry. But we do like some of the new changes that are occurring as well. So we've stuck with the traditional because we know it's strong and it's a gold standard. But we do now offer what's called an EPQ, which is an extended project qualification. And we've taken that straight from the IB, the International Baccalaureate system. And we have made it into a standalone qualification. And essentially what that means is that our students at 17 years of age undertake a totally independent piece of research that might end up in a dissertation, it might end up in writing a play, producing a work of art. And during that process, they have a tutor, and they talk to the tutor, they gain some ideas and some advice, but they do all the research, and they learn the key skills they will need for university and further education. And at the end of that process, what I particularly like, two things happen. Firstly, they are given a viva. They're given a panel interview by a pretty scary group of teachers, me included probably, and they have to account for what they have done during their period of investigation, and they have to give a presentation on all of that. And then the most exciting piece of the whole EPQ is at the end of the process, they write a reflective short essay in which they reflect on what they have learned from the process, what's gone well and why, but perhaps most importantly, what's gone wrong and what they've learned from it. So you can actually do a piece of work that doesn't quite come off as the student hoped it might have done, but they can still secure the top grade in the EPQ if their reflection shows what they've learned from getting it wrong. And I think educationally, that's a very exciting place to be. And we know that when our students go on to university interviews, many of them get offers, and many of those get offers below the published list of offers because the universities are so impressed with the quality of their EPQ and what the EPQ has taught the student.
Absolutely. And on the lighter side, how are we doing in rugby?
Well, it's a game that's very important to me. I've come from a strong rugby background, and we're doing okay. Yes, we're not the biggest school these days because, of course, we're co-educational, so we have 300 boys and 300 girls, and we're in many cases playing schools of over 1,000 boys. But we are certainly very competitive, and we certainly hope to produce one or two future internationals. And our rugby is taken very seriously. Our head of rugby is a former England international. He's a level 5 RFU coach, and Bath, of course, is a great rugby city. So our rugby is very strong. Interestingly enough, and it may be the case in your time, Ronald, our hockey is particularly strong. We continue to be the strongest school in the Southwest, and our boys and girls, certainly last year our boys won every single match, and the girls for 3.5 years running up to last year won every single match. So our hockey is perhaps our top sport at the moment, but we are, you know, very keen that the netball and the cricket and the rugby continues to challenge for that top place.
I'm surprised, and I have to qualify. In England, we talk about hockey being grass hockey. That is correct.
Yes, yeah? Correct.
When I came over here and I mentioned that, I said, "Oh, hockey," they said, "Well, get your skates on." And I said, "Oh, no, that's not quite." Now, I am a little disappointed that, cricket is not the main sport. I'll accept rugby, but grass hockey to cricket, I'm not sure. I did.
Well, hockey's a changed game these days. We obviously play on all weather surfaces, and the old grass hockey has long since disappeared. And it's a very fast, athletic, skillful game. And I'm a convert myself. I've come from a rugby background, and I love my rugby. I still referee school matches here, but I certainly admire the skill on the hockey field and indeed the cricket square.
And I have to also ask, the swimming pool at the end of St. Peter's, that's still there? Is it still a...
refurbished about 15 years ago. So it's a small swimming pool, and it's a nice outlet for the boarders. We're very fortunate. We're a mile away from Bath University, which has been voted the number one university in Britain for the last couple of years. And there we have an Olympic training centre. So 1 mile away, we've got an Olympic-sized swimming pool, and British Athletics trains out of there, along with many other sports. So our elite sports boys and girls, our elite swimmers, our elite athletes, at the end of the school day, head on down to the university for expert coaching.
Okay. Well, I'm going to close up with, I know we used to do some horticulture around the property. There was a question I had, and it just ran away from me, but that's okay. Are Americans still trying to buy the bridge down in the valley? Are they still trying? Because, you know, when we were there, the big debacle was some American was constantly coming over to see Bath and then trying to purchase. So I trust that's still there.
Yeah, that's still there, and that is now the property of the National Trust. Like many of these schools about 20 years ago, Stowe and others that have these beautiful buildings, we gave some of that land to them to manage. We still get full use and, of course, free views from top of the hill, but they manage that. And in exchange, you'll be delighted to hear this, they have given us some playing fields. So we have some flat playing fields with about 6 rugby pitches on now. So all of our fields, all of our pitches are on site.
We've been talking with James Murphy O'Connor. He is the headmaster of Friar Park College in Bath, my alma mater. 40 years, and the school is constantly evolving, engaging its students, embracing the new environment that we all find ourselves in. And it will be interesting, even in 10 years, to go back and interview this institution of higher learning and pastoral care and see how fast things have changed just in 10 years. James, thank you very much. Would you like to close with any particular comment or opinion as you see education both in England and globally?
Thank you very much, Ronald. Thank you for having me on the show. And I think it's a very exciting time. But I do think whilst we all try to engage with the new technologies and the new world, which we must do, I do think that one of the best ways to navigate the new landscape is to very much know who you are and what your values are, and that you know what you're about, and that you are aware of others' needs before your own. And I think that good schools, wherever they may be, definitely impart that to their students, so that there is a sense of what you bring to the future, rather than allowing the future to overwhelm you, which it might well do if you don't have those roots and those anchors yourself. And I do still think there's a place for the matching of the traditional with the new world.
He said, as my colleagues in the world would say, agility is only possible with stability. James Murphy O'Connor, headmaster of Friar Park College, thank you for your time, sir, and please extend appreciation to your staff and associates for making this possible.
Ronald, thank you very much.
You have been listening to Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen, on Internet Blog Talk Radio, with guests providing their perspectives about you, the individual, the family nucleus, your career, your business, and your entrepreneurial spirit, life's perspectives about managing change. Join Ronald and guests every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for another episode about managing change on InternetBlogTalkRadio.com. Remember, the program is now showcased on managingchange2.com, where you can search for your favorite guest interview or get in touch with them and start a chat, enter their forum, or start your own public or private group to engage others in managing change. Catch Managing Change Internet Blog Talk Radio.com. Search Managing Change every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Be seeing you.